chanson. Écoutez, répétez.
My favorite style, and I see a cubist painting, I just gotta smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism.
Okay, good morning, good morning. And we have Emily in there this morning. It's good to see her happy face around the station. She was away for quite a while. Now she's back again. And there she is. And thank you, Emily. She's the producer this morning. And A Dream of 1,000 Birds. And that's the art at the Woolley Gallery now. That's the name of the art. We're going to find out more about it. My guest this morning is Rebecca Guberman-Bloom. And Rebecca went to Colorado University in Colorado Springs. She has a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Photography from Pacific Northwest College of Art, and where she graduated from honors. And Rebecca went on to study permaculture consultant. You are a permaculture consultant, and you studied design, right?
Well, it's actually just permaculture, and it's a design technology. I don't actually do that professionally. I'm just very interested in that, as well as nutrition. Right now I'm in school to become a nutritional therapist, and that's probably what I'll spend more energy focusing on.
Okay. And anything else?
Well, I study a lot of different things, lot of things related to spiritual growth and health. And so,
are you a poet by any chance? You
not
are,
professionally.
I think you are a poet. Yes,
I write
are.
A lot, and I spend a lot of time with words. And my walls in my studio are filled with paint and words, and little doodles and squiggles of how to make a fish look like a fish or something, or a hand look like a hand. Sometimes friends will come over that paint or draw better, and I ask them, how do you make a hand look like this? And they'll draw it on my studio wall.
Yeah.
So it's fun. But there's a lot of words. In fact, there's probably as many words as there are paint splotches on the wall.
Yes, and I find your work allegorical. It has a middle and it has meanings. Everything has a kind of a mysterious quality. And I'm going to talk about that a lot because I love how your work makes me think.
Good. Yeah.
And you love how your work makes you think.
Absolutely. I crave it. When I'm working on a piece and it has a lot of allegory to it, symbolism, metaphors, I dream about it often. As I'm sleeping, it becomes more clear to me. And sometimes right in the middle of painting part of the piece, I'll know exactly what it is, and the title will come right out of me, and I'll scribble it on my wall.
They're wonderful titles, and they're very much part of the work itself.
Yeah, they're very important.
It's part of the poetry of the work. Okay, I'm going to get into that more deeply, really deeply, in a minute. But I just wanted to tell people out there that you're currently a filmmaker.
I guess I consider myself a filmmaker. I have made a film, a documentary, about youth and HIV, and I co-produced it with a woman, Jennifer Jaco, many years ago, and that was the first film that she and I made, and it's the only film she and I made. It was more a piece of activism that became a pretty nice film, and it's used as an educational piece. However, I have not made a film since, but I dream about filmmaking all the time. In fact, I think of making documentaries pretty much every day, thinking that would be a great documentary, or the issues about water, that would be a really fantastic documentary, or this or that. Sometimes I just look at the shadows and the brilliant light coming through the window, and I think that would be a great thing to film. I should film that and make a documentary about that, about the dancing light. So I think about film, but I haven't yet made another one.
That's next.
That is next, for sure.
That is next. You had an award-winning documentary called Bloodlines, and as well as being a painter with a poetic nature, you are showing your latest work in the Woolley Gallery in the Pearl District.
That's
we
right.
didn't tell people where it was. I don't believe we did, but it is in the Pearl. It is up now. And you want to give me the address of that?
Sure. It's at the Mark Woolley Gallery at 120 Northwest 9th, Suite 210. You have to go up the stairs. It's a beautiful gallery. Mark is a really wonderful person and is very helpful. He has a lot of good art there.
Okay. And now I'm going to ask you some questions about the work. It's my initial reaction to the figures is that the people almost touch the ground. And in your paintings, they are partly plants and partly fairies. And they're involved in a mythical and poetic world where they have, they look almost alien. Do you want to talk a little bit more about where these strange and lovely people came from? What kind of a world do they inhabit here?
That's a long story, I think. Try to put it into a few sentences.
It's hard.
It is difficult. I think that as I imagine other places beyond this physical plane that I find myself in here, the third dimension,
okay,
in Portland, Oregon, in my house, or in my studio, or walking, things are very tangible and familiar, as they are to all of us. And when we dream, sometimes it's familiar, sometimes it's dreaming of this world, but oftentimes I dream about my paintings, and in fact, I'll see the exact painting in my mind. And when I started to draw in school, it was a way to leave the pressures of this world behind. So in other words, I would dream. It was just my execution of dreaming in an awake body. So I feel like I've gotten really good at that. You know, some people daydream and they don't know where their thoughts go, or some people, you know, do other things. I doodle. And so when I draw or sketch or write is always when I'm dreaming in my awake state. And I'm very connected to my dream time, and it's very important to me for a lot of reasons. And so I think that these figures come from, obviously deep from within my imagination, but what happens that I've discovered is that I get to connect to a child in me that never got to draw when she was little, and I never drew really at all. I played with dolls more than anything else, but I imagined that when I started to draw and people asked me, where do these things come from? They're really interesting, mm-hmm, and they're very unique, and they're very much you, a part of you. Sometimes I feel like saying that they're just from another planet, and I get to, when I dream and imagine myself flying somewhere, you know, if I am in actual dream time, I feel like I might visit this place. And then I get to bring these people, these figures, these creatures back. And I guess some people have said they kind of look alien, but they never seem alien to me, because I sort of think of gory alien types of, you know, Hollywood, uh-huh, figures. But these are very much childlike. There are these strange little things that do come through in sketches, and then I try to create them to have meaning in stories that seem meaningful, which they do to me. So I try to represent that in the painting.
Your mythical people are almost, they're sort of Flemish looking.
Yeah.
They have no, they haven't any hat, any hair, and but it's tucked in under very close fitting, almost a bathing cap type of covering, and then these important little faces come out. But the faces are dreaming, the dreaming faces, and the fact that there is a sky and a horizon behind so many of your figures. So the other things that are in the picture are few and far between, like the birds. It's about birds. And there are some very important birds spaced around and eggs. Mm-hmm. And some of the people are sort of the same shape as the eggs. They have the same quality as an egg. I mean, there's a lot of promise inside there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're dreamers. And then the very important title. The title is very important. And it says, I'm going to quote you, within the allegory there is always a tale that wants the delicate moments of the past and future together. You said that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you are also showing us Flora, who is the goddess of plants, Zephyros on Flora breathes, and then Elohim is Elohim, and Brugmansia, sacred shaman's plant. That is a plant that they're fooling around with, or that's in one of the pictures, isn't it? Now, have I named two or three pictures, or did I just name one that has all these different qualities?
They're parts of titles, or those words are in many of the titles, or the Brugmansia is not in any of the titles, but it is a very sacred plant that is represented in two of the paintings.
Now, and do you take these out of real books, or do you make these titles up?
No, I pretty much make them all up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have a lot of words in my mind, and I can't remember what they are, what they mean. So I have this really fantastic, huge old dictionary that I have in my studio.
Okay.
And I'll get curious when I'm wondering what this word is, and it has to do with this painting that I'm working on, but I can't remember what the word is, so I look it up, and then I actually spend hours drifting through the dictionary, and sometimes I'll come across the most extraordinary things. Sometimes I'll just forget what word I'm looking up, and I'll have so many thoughts and ideas, and the titles just pop out. They come to me, and that happens about a third of the time with when I title the work. About two-thirds of the time, I get the title as I'm actually painting, and then I scribble it on the wall. Or sometimes walking down the street, I'll just absolutely know that that's what it is. And sometimes it's just a matter of me speaking poetry or speaking word language just in my studio. And thank God no one's there to hear me, because it sounds like gibberish. And I start speaking about it, and as if I'm just talking to myself or to the painting. And, well, it is like talking to the painting, and the painting pretty much, I feel, tells me what it is. And the figures always speak to me in certain ways. Obviously, I can't hear them with words, but they come through me, and I try my best to depict what they want to say, and they're very special that way.
Yeah, they're very special. Very special, very personal.
Somewhat personal. I mean, they're always personal, all of our paintings that we artists make. All of the work that artists make is usually personal, but I like to think also that it's very accessible to other people's emotive process or dreamlike qualities, that when they're looking at the piece, they can drift away inside of it and imagine their own world and connect with something that's meaningful to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that my photography was very personal, very much a part of my process of growing and expressing my own sorrow, really, my suffering as growing up as a 20-something-year-old and with different degrees of situations that I saw myself going through, and it wasn't as accessible. And so I fortunately moved beyond that personal quality of making art into a place where I want it to be accessible to others, so that it is coming from a personal place, but it's also meaningful to others in whatever way it needs to be.
Okay. What is A Land Where Children Grow Wings? Can you talk about that painting a little bit? A Land Where Children Grow Wings.
That's not a title of a painting.
It's not? If what is it?
That is part of a title. It's a very, very long title. I don't suppose you wrote the whole thing down. But it's I don't have the whole thing in my memory. It's a very, very long title.
Is it a title by you?
Uh-huh.
It's a title that you made up?
Yeah, wish I actually had that. Let me think if I can remember the whole thing. That's just a piece of a title. It's I would need to have the full title in front of me. I mean, it's the longest title that I've ever made up.
I see.
And it's a story. It's about a particular figure who's a portrait of this figure who's wearing a crown, and he's got his hands tucked under his, under themselves.
Oh,
in
yes.
In front of him. And he's
the crown guy.
Yeah, he's wearing a bright red shirt, and it's a really bright painting, and there's a landscape behind him, and the sky gets really bright up to where he's looking. And so this title is describing his journey, and I'd really wish that I actually had the title in front of me. It's a wonderful title.
I can't recall the whole thing, though. I'm going to riff through my notes here, and I don't have it all. And I should have it, but I don't. The Land Where the Children Grow Wings, and then the crowned figure. And birds, I have birds, crowns, peaked hats, a land of spaces, tangible fairy places. And you have some favorite icons in your paintings this time that have to do with the whole subject matter of it. And that they're the eggs and the birds. And the trees, they're trees. And one of the paintings has a tree right side up and a tree upside down floating in the sky.
Mm.
Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, that piece is called Evolution, and that's one of my favorite pieces. It has all of the symbols that I feel come through in my work. It all came together in that piece. The upside-down tree is actually, it seems like it's just hanging from the heavens, but it is actually suspended by very fragile-looking not strings, but just these things that are holding up the tree, and you can't see where they're attached to. And the tree represents the tree of knowledge, and it's depicted upside down as it is in the Kabbalah and the Jewish mystical Kabbalah. And I like the way that it talks about how it's spreading its knowledge down from the heavens. So the roots are gathering the knowledge from the heavens, from the
right.
mystical heavens that contains all the knowledge of the universe.
Yeah.
And that through that tree comes down, and its fruit and its leaves drop upon our heads, drop upon our world, our reality. And so that's why it's upside down. And it's called Evolution because there's a figure coming out of an egg. It's a man's head that's bald, and he is coming out of an egg, the top of an egg. And then the next person, and it moves into different people that are evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last evolution is a beautiful person that has gotten wings, or, mm-hmm. Sort of an angelic figure. And it's not wearing any clothes, but it's a very white figure. And, again, a background with mountains and things. And there's always eggs. Well, not always, but predominantly in many paintings, the eggs represent that perfect place inside of us all.
Oh, okay.
That contains our magic and our essence, really, and that place that's not describable with words. It's a feeling, and there's always something special in there.
Oh.
And the egg protects it very well, and it's such a beautiful symbol. I love eggs. I had chickens for a while, and it was very inspiring to me. And how mysterious, also, they would just drop these eggs down every day. And
yeah. Such promise in an egg.
And they're beautiful.
And they're so beautiful.
There's
right.
so many stories and myths and fairy tales about golden eggs and uh-huh. big blue eggs, and they're fascinating to me.
You so they've become. I similar. Have a turtle, and she lays eggs once a year. My turtle.
Wow.
And they're really beautiful. They're little capsules. They're kind of a very light orange, very, very light orange. And you can see the yolk inside this egg, and they have a kind of a leathery kind of a shell. And we have a big celebration when Igor lays her eggs. Igor's a girl.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
I should say that we need station identification, and this is KBOO 90.7 FM, and this is Julie Bernard talking to Rebecca Guberman Bloom this morning about her work in the Woolley Gallery down in the Pearl District. And now let us continue. I think we have a few more minutes here.
I think I remember part of the title of that painting.
Oh, good.
It's something like, the character's name is Nimbo.
Nimbo, but all right.
He told me that, you know, in some words that weren't really words, but his name is Nimbo, and he's on his way to Augur Nagur land, which is this land where he's on his way to find the fairy that makes magic dust with her tears. Something like that. And so this, the whole title is the depiction of that. And I know I'm leaving some of it out, but it's about this figure who is journeying to this special place and to collect very special medicine to work with the children. And anyway, it's intending to be a children's book, which is what I'm going to be doing in the fall. I'll be writing a children's book.
And now you have started this book already?
I have started another book with my previous partner, Jeffrey Harrison, who's a writer. He is in the middle of writing a children's story based upon a very old painting, one of my first paintings that I painted for my mother. And he's not finished with it, and he just had a baby, so I'm not sure when it will be finished. But I plan on also... Pretty much any single one of my paintings could be turned into a children's story. And a lot of them in this particular show is they're very much sketches and portraits that are going to be included in children's stories and children's books.
Have you written children's stories before?
Not in their entirety, no. That's what I'll be working on this fall.
But they're very much in the titles. Are children fascinated with this work?
You know, have no idea.
We need to bring some children
Absolutely.
In and have them pass a little judgment on these.
Right, that would be wonderful. I'd love
yeah.
to take my painting skill and what they represent and put them into books and stories so that I can read them to children, and that would be really meaningful to me.
You have cards out there. Occasionally I see cards in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still doing that, making cards then?
Yes, I started making greeting cards with pictures of my work because I would sell so much of my work and I would miss it and I forget what it would look like. So I took them and made greeting cards, and they are for sale in different places in Portland. I haven't been doing it lately because I've been so busy building temples and things.
Yes.
But I am going to school for nutritional therapy and with this show, of course. But I will be making more, and I like to have them out. It's a really nice way to have people see the work.
So far, have you found that children are intrigued with them when they do? Do you have any reactions from any children that
you know,
can remember?
I'm embarrassed to say I don't have children
People,
that much in my life.
We need to have this experience.
It's true. I have been craving that to
get those people out there. Please take your children into the Woolley
It'd
Gallery
be nice to know.
And let them have the experience of these beautiful paintings.
Yeah,
these wonderful,
it feels like
mythical
they do need
people.
To see them for sure.
See
and
what they say.
It's also for the children in each of us, so I recognize
sure.
that we all have that quality, and so I think that that's what I've mostly focused on is the childlike quality that's in each adult that
yeah.
I know, you know, pays more attention to the work than a child would. And so there was a really special child that did come to my show. Her name's Amanita.
Amanita?
And she and I... played house during my opening, and so she was more interested in playing with me than she was in the work. I should have asked her about it, but I'll have to ask her. So,
well, when I would just love to know what children, the reaction of children to this work, and I suspect that you have some adults who understand what this is, are very intrigued by the work, and can you tell me any interesting things that people have said to you, the grown-up type?
I get so many wonderful responses, and people...
Mostly wonderful responses?
Yeah, unfortunately, people don't come to me and tell me they don't like it. If they don't like it, I'd prefer they keep it to themselves, obviously. But, no, I actually do prefer some criticism, but usually it's friends that come over and I ask them about it. And usually it's not about what I'm painting, it's just technique or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I love so much when people come and they put their hands over their heart and they have this sweet look on their face. And they kind of shake their head, you know, in recognition, just like that it meant something to them.
They can identify.
Yeah, that it affected
the
them in some way.
Spiritual quality.
It helped them to think about something profound or something sweet or a memory or an idea about being able to just drift away inside of themselves for a little bit of time and play within themselves. And so I get a lot of responses and a lot of thank yous from people who really appreciate being able to take a few minutes to do that. And it's just sweet to them. And definitely people want me to make children's books. And that was really wonderful because that is exactly what I'm going to be doing next. I'll still paint and I'll still work on these pieces, but I definitely want to work on some books and move it into that realm.
Okay. Well, I will be dreaming of you inside my eternity. That's one of the titles of the... Which one is that, The Eternity?
That's the one, a very large painting that has two figures that are inside the same dress. And one of the female is wearing a pointy cap, and the male's wearing a crown. And he's looking down, and she's looking up, and she's holding a bird that's flying away in her hands, delicately, between just two fingers. And she's wearing a pointy hat, which is... really in reference to, it's pointing up, it's pointing towards the heavens, it's pointing towards a place of the unknown. It's a place where she is gathering knowledge. It's this suggestion of always moving upward into a place of the unknown, as we all are doing that. And so the crown just represents the royalty of life, the sacredness of the life of the male, of that man, and so they're working together. They're in the same dress. They're enclosed in the same space, and so it's about that dance between male and female, that beautiful relationship, and how the bird symbolizes the expression of it's always changing. It's always changing, and it's always moving towards the direction of the unknown. As everything is, and so it's in recognition of that.
Your eternity has great promise. A great promise,
absolutely.
At least for me when I look at it.
It does for me in real life as well.
How come, we're going to have to bring this to a close, but I was going to ask you, I'm going to throw in one question. We'll think about it, and when you come back again, we'll discuss it. You have no butterflies, you have no cicadas, you haven't anything that metamorphosizes.
Not in this work.
Except eggs.
Right.
And so you have it, have you done that before?
Much of my work has had wombs and that type of metaphorical symbolism, but not in this work.
We could sure talk a lot longer.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your coming this morning. We've been talking to Rebecca Guberman Bloom, whose work is at the Woolley Gallery now. And you should see it, and you'll find yourself in another place. And this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus.
that concludes the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday. Did I say Tuesday? Thursday. Thursday Morning Radio Zine for February 9th. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! More on the controversy over the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad, and Mary Mapes, former CBS television producer, tells her side of the story that brought down CBS Evening News director, anchor, Dan Rather. Stay tuned for that. From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Muslims are continuing to stage protests.